Now then, what do the following people have in common? Tony Curtis, Pete Postlethwaite, Jay Rafferty, Leslie Nielsen, Susanna York, Paul the Octopus, Elizabeth Taylor, and Edward Stobart. Well, you've spotted it, I'm sure, a mile off. They've all died in the last few months. Jim Morrison of the Doors sang Riders on the Storm. Into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown. It was the last song he recorded to be released. He died shortly afterwards at the age of 27. Into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown. We're cast into a howling wilderness. And to quote Jim Morrison, no one gets out of here alive. They all died. I too will die. Solomon wrote, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, and a time to die. So please come with me to the reading which we had, Psalm 90, where we're going to think about death in the company of Moses. Now in the original it says, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Now why was Moses thinking about death? Because the people he was leading through the wilderness to the promised land were a people under judgment, having dragged their feet every step of the way and murmured and complained and rebelled. God said, enough. If you don't want to go to the promised land, then you will die in the wilderness, and it will be your children who will inherit the land. So for getting on 40 years, Moses witnessed daily the death of that generation. Now, I know some people here were at a funeral on Wednesday. But how many funerals do you attend in a year? How many people have you seen die? How many dead bodies have you seen? Probably not many. But day after day, Moses watches the death of a generation. Day after day, funerals, sorrow, grief. So who better to take us by the hand and lead us through this subject? Maybe somebody's thinking, wait on, it's a Sunday evening. Do we really want to think about death on a Sunday evening? Well, we laugh at the taboos of previous generations, but many of them knew how to die. Psalm 90 is in the Book of Common Prayer, and it was appointed to be read at burials, at the burials of our forebears. So the words of Psalm 90, if you like, got into the DNA of generations of people who lived in this country. This is what it says. This is the Book of Prayer's translation of Psalm 90. Just a few words. The days of our age are 80 years. And though men be so strong that they come to 80 years, yet is their strength then but labor and sorrow. So soon passeth it away, and we are gone. But who regardeth the power of thy wrath? For even thereafter, as a man feareth, so is thy displeasure. O teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. That was read at funerals. Death, the anger of God. Is that a bit harsh? Reading that at a funeral? But you see, the wound was to heal. It's a word to the living before it's too late. A rehearsal of the realities of life and death so that we are all ready when our time comes. Are you ready to die? So please have Psalm 90 open in front of you, and we'll divide the psalm into 5 points. Well, point number one, we begin with the eternity of God. Look at verses 1 and 2. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Now, what's the oldest thing you've ever seen? Now, don't be rude. A mountain? Are mountains subject to change and decay? Can they be swept away? Mountains appear ancient, immovable, permanent, as it were, from time out of mind. But older still is the world. Generations come, generations go, the earth remains. But before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, says Moses, you are God. God creates a universe. Literally, verse 2, he gives birth to the world. And physicists tell me that where you have matter, where you have stuff, and you have space, you also have time. So God creates time. Time belongs to this creation, a time to be born and a time to die. But God stands outside this creation. He stands outside time. God inhabits eternity. He tells Moses by the burning bush, I am the great I am who I am. He's the God who eternally exists. He is the source of his own being. He has no end, no beginning. Even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. So as Moses treks across this howling wilderness, death all around him, what does he do? Well, he runs to the eternal God. Lord, you have been our dwelling place, our home in all generations. Or a guest from this morning, I've been reading about the experiences of an Italian soldier on the Russian front in the Second World War. And it's just 30 days of his retreat with the Italian army and the German army in the middle of the Russian winter, with the Russians pursuing them. And he spoke of the freezing winds. They're in sub-zero temperatures, minus 45, minus 50. And the wind, he said, it lashed against them. Just quoting from him now, he says, the wind wouldn't let up. It explored every part of our bodies, tirelessly intent on wringing the life out of us. Then he says this, what a joy it would have been to lie down on the floor of a hut for a few hours to be sheltered from the wind. Somewhere to go where I can find shelter from the howling wind. And that's Moses, isn't it? In his distress, in this howling wilderness of this world, death all around him. Oh, just to go to his shelter, to go to God, the comfort of his eternal home. Lord, you've been our dwelling place in all generations. When you were a kid, did you never run home when you were upset? So faced with death, Moses knew where to go. Do you? Well, point number two is the mortality of man. Look at verse 3. You turn man to destruction and say, return, O children of men. It's an echo of Genesis chapter 3. You may remember the account. Adam and Eve, they eat the forbidden fruit. It's an act of defiance. And with that act of defiance, sin, rebellion, treason, if you like, enter the world. And the consequences are immediate and catastrophic. We read God's words to Adam. He says, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you, and you shall eat of the herb of the field. And then he goes on to say this, in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Adam and his children are under a death sentence. Adam is a dead man walking, and it's only a matter of time before he returns to the dust. You turn man to destruction and say, return, O children of men. At many funerals I've said these words, earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. The mortality of man. But notice two things about verse 3. How is death described? A gentle friend? Sweet release? The natural order of things? Verse 3, you turn man to destruction. That's how death is described, destruction. It's the destruction of my humanity. It's the tearing apart of body and soul. It's the unmaking of me. Death is not natural. It's God's death sentence. It's God's sentence of destruction. And the second thing you notice is the decree of God. You turn man to destruction and say, God speaks, return, O children of men. God issues a decree. So what removes me from this world is not disease or disaster. What removes me from this world is the decree of God. And God's decree is irresistible and irreversible. Now, have you ever heard of a Mr. Gerald Evans? He founded the Life Extension Society. He advocated the freezing of bodies for later resuscitation when medical science, as it were, caught up. And he dedicated his life to achieving immortality. Well, you could probably guess he died in January 1986. Even before he took his first breath, God had already decreed the day of his death. Psalm 139, all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Now think about that, my friend. It means that God has already appointed, has already chosen the day of your death. It's already written down on God's calendar. And there's nothing you can do to stop it, resist it, change it, or postpone it. It's the decree of God that removes me from this world. If you look at verses 4 to 6, our mortality is further spelt out. Look at verse 4. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday and when it is past, are like a watch in the night. Now, who's the oldest man who ever lived? It's sort of one of those quizzes at Holiday Bible Club, isn't it? And the answer is Methuselah. How old was Methuselah? He was 969 years when he died. In other words, some of the patriarchs lived to be nearly 1,000 years. Can you imagine that? 1,000 years. Can you imagine being born before the Battle of Hastings in 1066? That gives you some idea. Now, viewed from our perspective, our few scanty years, measured against our little lives, that 1,000 years sounds almost like immortality, doesn't it? But measured against the eternity of God, 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, and like a watch in the night. Can you remember much of yesterday? Maybe yesterday dragged. But as you think of yesterday today, went like that, didn't it? Or maybe you had to get up in the night and feed the baby. Do you remember much about that? Maybe the time, oh. But this morning, this afternoon, this evening, went like that, didn't it? Today it seems nothing. And if that's how 1,000 years appear in God's sight, how short, how transitory are our days? In God's eyes, we're born and we die within the same hour. To the God who is eternal. The mortality of man, look at verse 5. You carry them away like a flood. We've all seen the images, haven't we, of the Japanese tsunami. And however strong or invincible or powerful you may be. Yeah, and I've heard sons talk with such joy about their fathers who are now dead. They say, oh, I remember when my father was a young man, he could do this and this, and he was strong. But we're taken away like a flood. However strong we appear to be, it's an illusion, isn't it? Death sweeps us all away. Look at verse 5. They are like a sleep. You put your head down, you close your eyes, and next to no time is the morning. You think, where did the night go? The time passed unobserved. Death always comes too soon. Senses, I've hardly lived. And maybe like a sleep, we're anesthetized to the shortness of life. We really don't know just how few our days are upon the earth. In the morning they are like grass which grows up. In the morning it flourishes and grows up, and in the evening it is cut down and withers. Now, Wayne Rooney is 25. In the last year, his form has dipped, although not yesterday. He got a few goals yesterday. But apparently, statistics suggest that Premier League strikers, if you look at goals per game, that dips significantly after their 25th birthday. Think of that. You're over the hill at 25. See the dew of the morning. Think of that morning grass. So lush, so fresh. But already at the age of 25, the dew is evaporating. The sun has come out. It's beginning to dry. Soon you'll be saying, oh, in my days, or these days, the mortality of man, our lives are no more than a morning and an evening. The eternity of God, the mortality of man. So point number three, Moses goes on to a further subject. He speaks of the anger of God, verses 7 to 11. Now, why is life brief? Why are we mortal? Why are we afraid to die? Shortly after Alfred Hitchcock's 80th birthday, you know Alfred Hitchcock, the director, Psycho, Vertigo, The Birds, and all those other ones, he was visited by Ingrid Bergman. And she says, he took both my hands and tears streamed down his face. And he said, Ingrid, I'm going to die. The fear of death is universal. When you're fit and well, you're not, oh, I'm not afraid of death. When death gets up close and personal, the fear of death is universal. Why? We need to look beyond the grave. Yes, death is God's sentence of destruction. Our bodies do return to the dust. But that's not the end. The terror, the fear of death, is what lies beyond. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, eternity. The Bible says it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment. We go to eternity via the judgment. And you know what the verdict will be. God has given two laws. The laws are love. Love me with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Neither of those laws have I kept, not even for a minute. I'm a lawbreaker. I know what the verdict at the judgment will be. Guilty. I'm a sinner. And the wages of sin is death. The everlasting destruction of my humanity. The unmaking of me forever. The wrath of God. What the Bible calls the second death. The punishment of hell. And that's why death terrifies. For we have been consumed by your anger and by your wrath. We are terrified. Every death is to recall to my mind that God is angry with me. And it frightens me because of what lies beyond. By your wrath, we are terrified. Look at verse 8. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. Every death is to recall to my mind that God punishes sin. And no one gets away with it. There are no secret sins, are there? You have set our iniquities before you. The darkness can never hide me from him. Our secret sins in the light of your countenance. Moses is saying, you never get away with it. And death is the reminder that you don't. You can't live as you please. The sins of my childhood, the sins of my youth, to God they were just a few minutes ago. We never get away with it. And death is a reminder that we don't. Verse 9, for all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. Every death is to awaken me to the reality of God's anger. We finish our years like a sigh. The sense is, well, was that it? All that effort, all the effort of living, and it just come to nothing. Was that it? What was the point? So little achieved. I thought I was God. I thought I could do what I wanted, but death has cut me down. It reminded me what I really am. When all is said and done, what we are is a rebel race under judgment, and God will hold me to account. As says Moses, there's no escape. There are no exceptions. Verse 10, the days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they're 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. You can't postpone the inevitable. You might live to 70, someone might live to 80, say, oh, great age, you did really well, a good innings. But God's summons finds us all. But look at verse 11. Verse 11 is there to make us sit up and think. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. Now what does that mean? Who knows the power of your anger? Moses is saying, who actually stops to think about the power of God's anger? Do you? He's saying, think of all the bitterness of the grave. Think of the fear and the alarm of the dying. Hitchcock is crying. But that's been repeated millions of times over. The weeping, the fear, the alarm. Think of the ruin of the body. Think of the death agonies as the spirit is torn from the body. Think of the farewells, and it's the farewell to everything, isn't it? He's saying, think of it, condense it, bring it, hold it close to you. Think about it. Because those are just the borderlands of God's anger. Oh, you're feeling the heat of the furnace, but it's no more than the heat at a distance. Who stops to think of the power of your anger? Who knows the power of your anger? And then he says this, for as the fear of you, so is your wrath. He's saying that God's wrath is more than equal to our deepest, tenderest fears. You go to a great country house, and it's magnificent. Oh, look at the size of it, the opulence, the vastness of this great country house. And in the grounds is a little shed. Is that God's wrath? A little shed on the edge of the estate. When God is angry, all of God is angry. And if I can't get my mind around the immensity of God, the God who can put this universe in his pocket, then I cannot get my mind around the immensity of his anger. That's what Moses is saying. For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. So we die because we're sinners. We've broken God's commands. We've gone our own way. And God will hold us to account. We're a race under judgment. Which brings us to point number four. Stop. If all that's true, stop. Verse 12. So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. How old are you? You 8? 20? 50? 80? Says Moses, don't just number your years. Number your days. In other words, I need to live with the awareness that today might be my last. But I can't, can I? If you're honest, how many of us live as though today might be my last? I can't do it. I don't do it. Most of us live as though we're going to be here forever. In fact, I spend my days skirting round the subject. I don't like to think about death. I'm probably, in my heart of hearts, maybe objecting to a sermon like this on a Sunday evening. It's in bad taste. I don't know how to handle my life. I've got all these days. What do I do with them? Exactly, says Moses. So verse 12, he's asking God to teach us. God to teach us how to handle our lives, how to number our days. So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Make us wise, Lord, because we're not wise left to ourselves. We're foolish in the handling of our lives. So, my friend, are you willing to learn? If today might be my last, don't postpone, therefore, till tomorrow. What must be done today? That's being wise in my days, isn't it? If today might be my last day upon this earth, don't postpone to tomorrow what must be done today. So here's the great question. Am I right with God? I can't leave that till tomorrow. Tonight I might die, and if I'm not ready to die, I'm not ready to meet with God. So don't put off getting right with God. Don't put off coming to Jesus Christ. Don't put off turning from your sins and crying to him to save you, to forgive you, to redeem you. Are you right with God? Are your sins forgiven? Have you come to Jesus Christ? Well, then how can you leave it? If today might be your last. Says Moses, stop. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Are you ready to die today? And Christian friends, what of you? Are there sins that to finish with? And you say, well, I'll finish with them tomorrow. No, finish with them today. Are there people you need to be reconciled to? And you say, well, I'll be reconciled to them tomorrow. No, today. Have I treated today as I've got plenty more Sundays? So I can be easygoing about Sunday, easygoing about the blessings of the Lord's Day, because I've got loads of Sundays. It doesn't matter if I don't get it right today. I may be thinking, well, I'll seek first the kingdom of God tomorrow. I'll get involved in church life tomorrow. I'll witness to those people. I'll write that letter. I'll send that text. I'll do what I have to do tomorrow. I'll serve the Lord better in the future. Says Moses, stop. Because if you think like that, you don't know how to handle your life. You need therefore the Lord to teach you to number your days. Don't leave till tomorrow what must be dealt with and done today. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Am I walking with God today? Am I enjoying Jesus Christ today? Am I ready to die today? And so to our fifth point. And it's a prayer. And it's a prayer of Moses, verses 13 to 17. Riders on the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown. Cast into a howling wilderness. And as a condemned sinner, Moses tells me, I will perish under the anger of God. And at death, it becomes the gateway to that other place, to hell. So Moses prays. What does he pray? He prays this. He says, Lord, if life is so short, if life is so miserable, must it really end this way? If you are the God I believe you to be, if you are the Lord, that's the name he uses, the God who takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked might turn from his way and live. Verse 13, return, O Lord, how long? And have compassion on your servants. You say, verse 3, return, O children of men. We say to you, verse 13, return, O Lord. Don't leave us like this. Don't leave us to perish under your anger. Have compassion. Because what can we do? We're helpless, lost, broken. We're in a howling wilderness. So come and shelter us from the storm. We've got nowhere else to go. There is no other God. Lord, you've been our dwelling place in all generations. And Lord, since our life is but a blink, don't leave it a moment longer. Because a moment for you, a second for you, is the death of thousands of us. Verse 40, satisfy us early, as soon as you can, with your mercy, with your love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Lord, if your wrath is tracking our every step, may your love be traveling faster than your wrath and overtake your wrath and lay hold of us before your anger does. Lord, if you like, help us to shake off your anger, but never to shake off your love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Verse 15, make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us, the years in which we have seen evil. Lord, it's like our sorrows have tipped the balance this way. And it's miserable. We're dying under your anger. Well, Lord, it's time to tip the balance the other way. Lord, return. Change your mind. The balance is like this for all our sorrows. Pour in some joy on this side to at least make the balance equal. Let your work appear to your servants and your glory to their children. Lord, how do you want to be known? Do you want to be known as the God of judgment and destruction, the God who shows wrath to the uttermost? Can we not know you? Can our children not know you as the God who forgives? The God who is kind to helpless, ruined sinners who can't do anything to rescue themselves? The God who loves the unlovely, who forfeited any claim upon you. Can we not see your glory, not in your anger, but in your grace? The God who saves. The God who saves to the uttermost. It is the way it always has to be. Verse 17, and let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, established the work of our hands. He's saying, don't let our years end with a sigh. A life that ends with regrets. A life that finished far too short and all the things I wanted to do and I never did do. A life that was lost. A life that was consumed in your anger. Can't we live under your favor? So our lives count for something. Praise Moses, the man of God. As we close, did God answer that prayer? God answered it in a way more than Moses could have dreamed of. God sent his son into the world, and his son was nailed to a cross. And if the wages of sin is death, then Jesus received those wages. He died. He experienced death in all its bitterness, all its shame, all its terrors, the sting of death, because he died the punishing death that guilty men and women, boys and girls like us deserve to die. He was consumed in God's anger. And for him there was no mercy, no restraint. God, robed in vengeance, came and met him and did not spare him. But on the third day, he rose from the dead. And he lives. And because he lives, says the Bible, every guilty sinner who's destined to die, who lives under the condemnation of God, because he lives, everyone who goes to him, who trusts in him, then God will clear their debt of sin. God will pardon them. God will utter the words, no condemnation. And they too will live. So that when they come to die, no condemnation. When their soul is taken from their body, It's not the wrenching, not the tearing. It's the hand of their God upon their heart saying, it's time to come home. And their soul departs to be with Christ, which is far better. And for the sinner who trusts in Jesus, it's no longer death to die. And one day they'll be clothed with immortality. God will give them a new body, a glorious resurrection body, to dwell forever with Jesus in a howling wilderness. No, in the promised land. Moses prayed, make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us, the years in which we have seen evil. He's saying, oh Lord, make the scales balance. They're tipping this way, nothing but sorrow and grief and evil. Make at least balance. In Jesus Christ, has God just balanced the scales? No. In Jesus Christ, God takes the sorrows from this side. And he fills this side with fullness of joy and pleasures forevermore. We're all mortal. I think Sigmund Freud said, no one really believes in his own death. And we don't, do we? We don't know how to handle our lives, how to handle our days. But that tonight God may teach us, that God may help us to see our mortality, that God may help us to see that I die because I'm a sinner, and if I die unforgiven, I go to hell. We can't put it any more plainly than that, can we? And therefore I need the prayer of Moses. How can we sum up the prayer of Moses? Can we sum it up tonight? For me, a sinner under judgment. Well, Jesus himself has given us such a prayer. He just sums up what Moses puts in all these verses. He sums it up. Will you pray it? What is it? Jesus reduces it down to 7 words. God, be merciful to me, a sinner.